Chapter 39. So as to establish a connection between this author and the DA's office, Joan Valero, the DA's director of communications, became the go-between. For several months, information collected from fresh interviews and further research, not included in the reporter who knew too much, was passed along to Valero, who promised to forward it along to the investigator assigned to Dorothy Kilgallen's case. Finally, the investigator's identity was disclosed as Detective Richard Ramos, and from then on, this author sent the detective via email a boatload of new evidence almost on a daily basis. Later it was learned Ramos was sharing the evidence with Assistant District Attorney Eugene Hurley, head of the DA's Office Cold Case Project, specifically formed to investigate unsolved homicides. For the next few months, multiple emails floated between this author and Ramos. Once the June 1st meeting had occurred, the email flow continued in the spirit of cooperation between this author and the DA's office. Example emails included June 4th, 2017. Richard, thank you for the meeting on Friday, and for your dedication to discovering the truth about what happened to Dorothy Kilgallen so many years ago when she died. With his permission after speaking to him this morning, I am connecting you with Dennis O'Keefe, the former Dutchess County Sheriff's Detective, who provided me with information about Detective James Doyle and Dr. Charles Umberger, etc., as noted in the evidence report I provided. Please let me know at some point that you two have spoken. Mark Shaw. Ramos emailed back his intention to interview O'Keefe. June 9. Richard. One update I should mention. I was able to spend about 3 hours with Brenda DeJordan, Kilgallen's butler, James Clements' daughter, on Saturday before I left New York City. Her disclosures were even more insightful than the first 2 times I spoke with her. More to come, although she is having a tough time right now since her husband's health is failing. She is checking to set up a time for me to speak with her brother, Larry. Mark Shaw. That same day, Ramos emailed his thanks for this author's cooperation. From Mark Shaw, sent Monday, June 26, 2017, to Richard Ramos. Subject, forward, Dorothy Kilgallen. Richard. Good morning. Hope all is well in the big city. A few updates in regard to Dorothy's case. In case I get hit by a bus driven by one of those folks who apparently don't want me to further probe Dorothy's death or dispute the ludicrous Oswald alone theory regarding the JFK assassination, I want you to know that I am now in the possession of the complete Jack Ruby trial transcripts that have been missing for more than 50 years, with the intention of including them in a follow-up book to the current one to be published down the line a bit. The transcripts have never been published. To date, I have reviewed more than 1,000 pages, with another 1,000 or so to go, and now understand much better why Dorothy, based on the shocking testimony, her 2 exclusive interviews with Ruby, and the reliable sources she had in the Dallas Police Department, etc., could tell her colleagues and friends she was going to crack the JFK and Oswald assassinations wide open, and why her enemies could not permit her to write the book for Random House exposing those responsible who risked exposure if the book was published. Regarding additional interviews about Dorothy's case, attached are the 2 most recent ones. The first is with Brenda DeJordan, whom I mentioned to you is Dorothy's butler's daughter. I provided you excerpts from the first time I talked to her, but have added the 2nd and 3rd interviews for your interest. I believe you will find her comments about Dorothy's life and times, and her death, quite revealing, especially regarding what her father told her in and around the day Dorothy died. Also, some interesting information concerning disturbing family dynamics with Richard and the children. Mark Shaw. The response to this email was immediate. From Richard Ramos to Mark Shaw. Monday, June 26th, 2017, 8:28. regarding Dorothy Kilgallen. Thank you. I will keep you updated. Richard Ramos. During the days following, Ramos received emails advising him of new developments in Kilgallen's case based on further investigation. This included the actual Brenda DeJordan interview notes that included her recalling FBI agents in the townhouse on the day Kilgallen died, taking her papers and documents with them, and the request to inform this author when he was going to interview her. In addition, Ramos was advised of interviews with Ken Edwards regarding Joyce Darling and Belva Elliott, Ron Pataki's first cousins, including statements that he admitted being the last person to see Kilgallen alive. Ramos also knew that Pataki's financial status was shaky. Recall Sinclair said Kilgallen told him Ron didn't have any money at all. She said, small newspaper, small job, and that Kilgallen had given Pataki a red Thunderbird. This information must have prompted Ramos to tell this author during their New York City meeting, I wonder if Ron Pataki sold Dorothy Kilgallen's information about the JFK assassination to some people. On July 13th, in answer to another email from this author, Ramos wrote, I apologize for the delay, have been busy with other cases. I appreciate all of your work. I am meeting with the assistant district attorney next week. I will keep you updated. Thanks again. On August 3rd, information about the aforementioned interviews with Jill Colmar's best friend Marianne Harrison and Bob Schulenberg, who each quoted Jill as saying, my mother was murdered, were forwarded. Ramos emailed, thank you. I will contact you when I get back next week. During the next 3 weeks, further fresh evidence was forwarded to Detective Ramos, all pointing toward Kilgallen being the victim of a homicide in 1965. It included the interviews with retired Detective Dennis O'Keefe and Robert Schulenberg, Pepper Hollingsworth, information about Richard not having Kilgallen's JFK assassination file, and Matthew Mira, account of Kilgallen friend Danny Brooks stating, they killed her, they effing killed her. She talked about Ruby, the interviews, her biggest case. All seemed in order, with this author continually praising the DA's office during numerous television, radio, podcast, and print interviews, since there was the assurance by Detective Ramos that Kilgallen would be afforded the justice she was denied following her untimely death. With the DA's office using its immense powers of investigation, this author was confident the mystery as to how Kilgallen died, and hopefully by whom, was being fully probed, with good news as to the progress being made. On August 29th, 2017, a phone conference was set up with Detective Ramos and Assistant District Attorney Eugene Hurley, whose identity was disclosed for the first time. This author had been told the meeting was to update the investigation, with the anticipation that Detective Ramos and ADA Hurley would provide information about who had been interviewed and what documents had been secured, with questions about the case to follow. Instead, without any notice, ADA Hurley, in a sullen and stilted voice, suddenly announced that the investigation had been thorough and was now being terminated without advance warning, since we have found no evidence that Kilgallen was harmed by the actions of anyone. Shocked, to the point of being speechless at the surprise news, this author stumbled with a response attempting to understand what had happened. Confused comments were offered since it appeared the decision was final. Finally, having paused to consider the consequences of the surprise disclosure, this author asked several rapid-fire questions of ADA Hurley, who admitted he had read The Reporter Who Knew Too Much, leading him to launch the investigation, concerning who had been interviewed and what documents had been retrieved through subpoena power. Told repeatedly, I cannot tell you that, and I am not going to argue with you, Mr. Shaw, in an angry tone when pressed for any details about the investigation, ADA Hurley apparently slipped from his prepared script and admitted, and we can't tell who did it. The disturbing conversation ended shortly thereafter, with ADA Hurley failing to explain the contradiction as to why his latter statement was 180 degrees in the opposite direction of their deciding Kilgallen had not been harmed. Incensed that the mystery surrounding Kilgallen's death would apparently not be solved by the DA's office, and suspicious that the investigation had been anything but thorough, this author immediately contacted via email several of the witnesses out of the 20-plus or so provided to Ramos and Hurley in the evidence report. Those who had given this author alarming new information about Kilgallen's death through personal interviews. The response was immediate and quite alarming. It included Robert Schulenberg, no contact from DA's office. Chris Broich, I did not get a call. Alan Eichler, no, nobody's contacted me, though I'm willing to talk if they do. And Dr. Donald Hoffman, no, I haven't been contacted by anyone from the DA's office. Based on the fact that these witnesses and several others, all known to Detective Ramos, who had not spoken a word during the phone conference, and ADA Hurley, had not been interviewed, an email was sent to Detective Ramos within a few hours of the telephone call. Now that I've had time to think all this through, some things just don't make sense. For instance, you must not have tried to contact Brenda DeJordan, since you told me you wouldn't do so until you spoke with me about it, so I could give her a heads up, etc. This makes me wonder about whether other important witnesses I mentioned were contacted, and thus, whether there really was a thorough investigation, one Dorothy deserves. Any clarification would be appreciated. It's one thing to keep the investigation secret, I understand that. But more information about what transpired seems advisable here, in view of the cooperative effort we have provided on this end. Since no response to the above email was received, a second was sent the next morning. In view of what I learned yesterday and last evening about your investigation after the conference call, I believe it would make good sense for you, Eugene, and I to chat again. This would be in everyone's best interest. Once again, no response was forwarded by Ramos or ADA Hurley to this author. Whether Ramos even shared the email with ADA Hurley is unknown. Undaunted, an August 31st letter was forwarded to Vance Jr., requesting that the investigation continue since it was clear it had been anything but thorough, whatever definition of that word might be possible, based on a multitude of factors. A full account of what had transpired from January to August 2017 via email and this author's June meeting with Ramos was included, along with disclosure of the August 29th telephone conference call with Ramos and ADA Hurley, as well as the emails from the four witnesses who had not been interviewed. In part, the letter read, "Mr. Vance, I have been fighting to discover the truth and to restore Dorothy's reputation for several years, but we need transparency here. We need to know the results of the investigation thus far, and be told that it will not end, especially with so many witnesses still to be interviewed. Why not make the results of the investigation public once it is completed, so there is no question of a cover-up, so the public will know that your office has, in fact, provided Dorothy with the justice she deserves." As I said, my hope is that the decision to close the investigation is not final. You have a chance to let the truth reign, Mr. Vance. Be a champion for Dorothy's rights. The alternative is simply unacceptable, a true miscarriage of justice. See the complete letter at www.thedorothykilgallenstory.org. No response to this letter was received. To the contrary, this author was provided with the following media release from the DA's office, forwarded to Susan Edelman of the New York Post, and only to the Post. Following a thorough 8-month-long investigation into the death of Dorothy Kilgallen, the New York County District Attorney's Office has found no evidence from which it could be concluded that Ms. Kilgallen's death was caused by another person. we would like to thank those who advocated on behalf of Ms. Kilgallen, because information provided by her supporters is one of the reasons why an investigation commenced 51 years after her death. This office remains dedicated to the investigation of cold cases, and if new evidence comes to light, we will review it appropriately. We will decline further comment on this matter. Instead of a promised lengthy article based on multiple witness quotes sent to Edelman by this author proving the existence of mountains of evidence concluding Kilgallen was murdered, the following short article then appeared in the Post on Saturday, September 2nd, 2017. D.A. No evidence, reporter investigating JFK assassination, was murdered. By Susan Edelman, New York Post. The Manhattan District Attorney's Office says it has, quote, found no evidence that newspaper reporter and TV star Dorothy Kilgallen was murdered as she dug deep into the JFK assassination. After announcing last January it would take a new look at Kilgallen's November 8, 1965 death, a thorough, 8-month-long investigation could not conclude that it was a homicide, the DA said in a statement. It thanked her supporters and promised to review any new evidence that emerges. The office refused to discuss its findings. Mark Shaw, author of a book on Kilgallen, the reporter who knew too much, slammed the decision as a miscarriage of justice and a cover-up, citing at least 8 witnesses not contacted by the DA. Kilgallen, 52, was found dead in her Manhattan apartment the morning after she appeared as a regular on the hit TV game show What's My Line. The city's then medical examiner ruled it accidental, caused by a combination of sleeping pills and liquor. Shaw argues she was drugged, possibly by mafia associates, and that her JFK files were stolen. The American public should know what happened to one of its heroes, a reporter with unqualified integrity, who sought the truth about the JFK assassination and was killed for doing so, Shaw said. Important to consider are the strong words included in the DA's statement, thorough 8-month-long investigation, and found no evidence from which it could be concluded that Ms. Kilgallen's death was caused by another person. Notice that the use of no evidence precludes the DA's admission that no direct evidence, circumstantial evidence, or hearsay evidence, terms that apply to all of the fresh evidence discovered by this author, had been discovered, but instead, no evidence. Without question, the statements by the DA's office did not even approach a semblance of truth, since the office had been well aware of a plethora of evidence of all types, pointing to Kilgallen being the victim of a homicide, as included in the book, the 22-page evidence report provided to Detective Ramos during the June 2017 meeting, and additional evidence forwarded to the office by this author via emails to Ramos from June through August. Curiously, the DA statement released to the New York Post was never published by that newspaper or any other media outlet. Regardless, Hurley, with the apparent approval of DA Vance Jr., distributed a statement that was blatantly false, one Hurley, Vance Jr., and Ramos knew to be false. Without question, this is a violation of attorney ethics, one that should be investigated by the New York State Bar Association, based, in the least, on Hurley and Vance Jr. releasing a statement that became public through the Post article to the effect that the DA investigation was thorough. Certainly it was not, since they either found no evidence from which it could be concluded that Ms. Kilgallen's death was caused by another person, because they didn't look for it, or they looked for it, didn't like what they found, and decided to hide it from the public. In an attempt to force an independent prosecutor to be appointed for review of the DA's distorted decision, one that appeared to be a cover-up following those in 1965 after Kilgallen died and again in 1968 when forensic evidence proving Kilgallen's murder was withheld. This author sent the New York Attorney General's office a lengthy letter supporting the request. A short time later, a form letter, bearing an indistinguishable signature, was received from the Attorney General's Division of Criminal Justice, Public Integrity Bureau, denying any action. Due to the time frame between when the letter was received and the reply forwarded, it is virtually certain that this author's concerns were not addressed even on a surface level. Continuing to fight the denial of justice while believing that the DA's actions were akin to an obstruction of justice, since closure of the investigation meant there would be no interview of important witnesses, this author filed a Freedom of Information Law, or FOIL, request with the DA's office. It demanded more than 20 witness statements and a lengthy collection of pertinent documents relating to Kilgallen's death. Included in the request were demands to produce the 1965 DD-5 Supplementary Complaint Report, also known as a Request of Cause of Death, sent by either the New York Medical Examiner's Office or the NYPD, Detective Doyle's Police Report, the November 1965 document from the New York Medical Examiner's Office sent to Doyle that attributed Kilgallen's death to visceral congestion, any and all documents received from the FBI in connection with the investigation into the death of Kilgallen from December 2016 to the present, and any and all references in any NYPD police reports to a vial discovered in the townhouse bedroom where Kilgallen's body was discovered. Recall, the vial was missing. In addition, a request was made to forward any DA interoffice memos and notes compiled by Detective Ramos and ADA Hurley so as to learn the real truth about why the investigation was terminated. Since this author, apparently to the surprise of Detective Ramos and ADA Hurley, was aware that many witnesses had not been interviewed and that these documents did indeed exist, it was anticipated that the DA's office would avoid cooperating and instead attempt to hide behind legalese and refuse to cooperate, since there were few, if any, witness statements to produce. After some delay, this is exactly what happened when the FOIL request was denied by Susan Roque of the DA's Special Litigations Bureau on October 12, 2017. See the DA's letter at www.thedorothykilgallenstory.org. Roque making this decision was certainly a conflict of interest, since she is an employee of the DA's office. An appeal of this decision to Kay Bailey, the appeals officer at the DA's office, was denied, with Bailey never even having the courtesy to respond to a final appeal motion. Alarmingly, especially for history's sake, the DA's actions have resulted in yet another apparent cover-up of why, how, and by whom Dorothy Kilgallen was murdered. While there was no investigation in 1965 and 1968, the current investigation is bogus, a whitewash, not thorough to any degree. Government corruption at its worst. The sad result is that not only was the investigation stonewalled for reasons still to be revealed, but by doing so, any further investigations by this author or others will be blunted as well, since no one outside the DA's office actually knows what took place, what work was actually done by Ramos or Hurley. In addition, without the power of the DA's office in tow, when it comes to those witnesses who refuse to cooperate with this author, Kilgallen's children, her relatives, Jill's best friend Marianne Harrison, and others who said they were too scared to come forward, no pressure may be exerted upon them to assist with knowledge they have about Kilgallen's death. The double cross by Richard Ramos and Eugene Hurley, apparently sanctioned by Vance Jr., caused immeasurable damage, shameful conduct for sure. This attitude toward Kilgallen continued when there was no response to this author's March 2018 letter to the district attorney, requesting that the investigation be reopened based on new evidence collected for this book. After listing such evidence and pleading for cooperation, the letter closed with these words. Without doubt, however, there is sunshine possible here. The chance to right a wrong, to work with me as was possible for nearly 8 months, to share information with one goal, to bring justice to the table. This will permit us to discover the truth about what happened to Dorothy so long ago. See the complete letter at www.thedorothykilgallenstory.org. Unfortunately, once again, no response was received to this latest letter, despite the promise in the press release to the Post stating, "This office remains dedicated to the investigation of cold cases, and if new evidence comes to light, we will review it appropriately." New evidence had come to light. But unprofessionalism continued on the part of Vance Jr. and his staff. On March 28th, aware that Ramos's email was no longer valid, a telephone message was left for him explaining the desire for a private conversation. No response was received to this request either, triggering the question as to whether he had left the DA's office between August 2017 and March 2018. When this author had a private investigator attempt to locate Ramos in the DA's office, the investigator was told Ramos had resigned. As a result of the continued non-cooperation, the New York Medical Examiner's verdict over 50 years ago stands, causing Kilgallen's reputation to still be tainted. If she was not murdered, then the conclusion is that this remarkable woman will still be perceived as a drug addict and an alcoholic, whose exhaustive JFK assassination investigation lacks credibility. Worse, the abuse of power by the DA's office to terminate its investigation results, at least for the time being, in permitting journalist Ron Pataki to go free. This is apparently a truism, since Pataki, to this author's knowledge, was not interviewed or investigated, despite Detective Ramos and ADA Hurley being privy to an overwhelming amount of evidence pointing to guilt. If nothing else but Pataki's two poems were considered, the guilt attaches to him like a well-worn sock, as does his admissions to being the last person to see Kilgallen alive. Sadly, the district attorney's unwarranted actions happened during a time when the office was under fire based on the questionable ethics of D.A. Vance Jr. His conduct regarding the Donald Trump son and daughter condominium hotel fraud non-investigation and the Harvey Weinstein sexual harassment case, among others, strongly suggested certain conflicts of interest, since, in each case, attorneys for these individuals were contributors to Vance Jr. re-election campaigns. The DA's decision to discontinue the investigation raises several questions, each centered around why a vibrant 8-month investigation into Kilgallen's death turned into a half-hearted attempt at discovering the truth about what happened to her in November 1965. First, why the excuse to pull the plug based on finding no harm to her when mountains of credible evidence point to there being a homicide? To her being the victim, Detective Ramos described during his June 1st, 2017 meeting with this author. ADA Hurley added to this conclusion by stating, albeit accidentally, that we can't tell who did it. A certain reference to his belief harm did come Kilgallen's way. After all, ADA Hurley's admission that he read The Reporter Who Knew Too Much, which included significant evidence that Kilgallen had been killed, signaled his assigning the case to the Cold Case Division investigating homicides. Why would he do that if he didn't believe there was a homicide? On top of that, this author had provided significant new evidence proving beyond any doubt she had been murdered. With these facts in mind, possible reasons for Vance Jr.'s office deciding to discard the investigation include Too much time was being spent by Detective Ramos on Kilgallen's cold case death, when he had other cases to investigate, and faced the possibility of interviewing more than 20 witnesses provided by this author. Cost of the investigation was prohibitive, since these witnesses were scattered about the United States, requiring extensive travel by Ramos. ADA Hurley did not have the time to assist with an extensive investigation due to his heavy caseload. ADA Hurley, pressured to clear cases or remove them from active investigation as soon as possible, realized the extent of the investigation into Kilgallen's death would not permit clearing the case in the near future. This pressure would have intensified, based on Hurley's apparent intention to resign a few months later. Detective Ramos reported to ADA Hurley that significant culpability for there being no investigation in 1965 rested with the NYPD and the NY Medical Examiner's Office to the extent of indicating government cover-ups that would embarrass both entities and thus should not be disclosed. Detective Ramos's surface investigation had turned up incriminating documents through the subpoenas he sent, including Kilgallen's JFK assassination file, that strongly contradicted the historically accepted aspects of the deadly events in Dallas in 1963, and thus should not be revealed. If too much time or expense was the cause of the investigation being halted, the DA statement could simply have announced this being the case. Instead, the statement went to the extreme by explaining not only that the investigation had been thorough when they knew it had not been, but that they had found no harm to Kilgallen when they knew that statement was also untrue, based on the plethora of evidence provided by this author to the contrary. Had the DA's office backed itself into a corner by taking on the investigation? It had played the big shot, received great publicity from the New York Post, and looked like the good guy for its investigation of a colder-than-cold, high-profile case that was 52 years old. However, at some point, apparently during August 2017, it appears ADA Hurley may have realized that the evidence Detective Ramos fed him was too controversial. Now, Hurley had a difficult decision to make. If he admitted the case was either too time-consuming or too expensive, this could trigger a backlash from the public, who expected the DA's office to provide a viable investigation. If Hurley decided that what was discovered was too controversial, what caused this reaction? Based on the facts surrounding the DA's decision, the only explanation possible appears to be that either Ramos uncovered documents through his subpoenas confirming corruption in the New York Police Department or the Medical Examiner's Office, quite likely, or that, through his subpoena power, he found documents about Kilgallen's JFK assassination investigation that had to be kept hidden. To date, no evidence has been forthcoming regarding the former reason. But in spring 2018, a reliable source close to the DA's office, who wishes to remain anonymous for fear of repercussion, told this author, "They quit because they found her file, the JFK file, the Kilgallen one. Buried it." Asked to elaborate, the source would not do so, and then cut off further communications. Attempts to confirm the source's information included reaching out through a mutual friend to James Bergamo, an assistant ADA in Vance Jr.'s office in June 2018. Bergamo was provided in confidence the facts involved with the bogus DA investigation. After having apparently done some checking, he responded via email to the mutual friend with the news that Hurley had just resigned. Bergamo then backed off, and instead of confirming or denying that the office had discovered Kilgallen's file, or agreeing to speak to this author as requested, stated that unfortunately, he was not in the cold case unit, and in addition, could not go above people who had been in the office for 20-plus years. Bergamo's refusal to cooperate meant that, even though he was aware of the injustice done to Kilgallen, it was apparently above his pay grade to get involved. A startling admission for an ADA, who is charged with upholding the law and seeing that justice is done. Bergamo's refusal to cooperate, and Ramos and Hurley's resignations from Vance Jr.'s office continues the mystery as to why Kilgallen's investigation was stifled. Regardless, the hope is that by providing these accounts, others, even those who are employed by the DA's office, may come forward to substantiate the source's startling disclosure. No question exists this author will continue an attempt to locate those who know the truth, those who truly believe the DA's office should stand for justice, not injustice, those unafraid of helping expose the real reason why the Kilgallen death investigation was halted so abruptly. That the source appeared quite credible permits clarity as to why the DA's office refused this author's extensive Freedom of Information requests for numerous documents connected to Kilgallen's death and the pending investigation. This prevented any knowledge of which documents had been searched for or discovered when providing an explanation could have aided further research into Kilgallen's case. If true, by having buried Kilgallen's file, could it have included clues as to who might kill her? The DA's office has contributed to a distortion of history, one perpetuated since the day President John Kennedy was assassinated. Only public pressure will force Vance Jr. to produce the file, to separate him from the current president, who continues to hide important facts from public view about the terrible events in Dallas in 1963. In both instances, abuse of power is the byword, where men of questionable moral and ethical values deny the public its right to important historical facts. This, unfortunately, is the sad state of affairs, where government corruption rules, and cover-ups like the one involving Kilgallen are commonplace. What has happened thus makes it most important to recall the importance of a quote from Robert F. Kennedy. The glory of justice and the majesty of law are created not just by the Constitution, nor by the courts, nor by the officers of the law, nor by the lawyers, but by the men and women who constitute our society, who are the protectors of the law, as they are themselves protected by the law.